The day's biggest stories, the people behind the headlines, the conversations you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Christy Strasser. You're listening to Odyssey's On Deadline. Well, we're apparently really mad now at our neighbor to the north, Canada, and here's how you can tell. Name-calling has escalated to rebranding threats. Here's WWJ in Detroit.
The trade war developing between the U.S. and Canada.
From the U.S. side, the president claims that Canada wants the benefits of being a state without actually being one. From Canada's side, they say that the Trump administration, and President Trump specifically, cannot be trusted. They're accusing the president of essentially pulling out the rug from underneath their feet in the final hours of these negotiations, throwing curveballs their way, and essentially trying to force them into a deal that they did not want to agree to.
ABC's Rachel Scott reporting there. Today, we'll hear from Canadian officials in Ottawa. They are expected to impose 50% tariffs on the U.S. in retaliation to President Trump's threats to add new 50% tariffs on their Canadian vehicles, auto parts, and steel. Meantime, President Trump claiming that he wants to rename Lake Ontario. So how do people feel about that? He wants to rename it Lake America. WWJ's Charlie Langton gathering more information and joins us live with details. Charlie.
I'll tell you what, a lot of opinions on this one. As the trade war escalates, it seems, between the U.S. and Canada, some say that the trade war is getting personal. Now, President Donald Trump is, hinting that he's going to change the name of Lake Ontario to Lake America. Linda from Oak Park says, a name change? Oh, not again.
Absolutely not. Reason is because I'm from Texas, Louisiana area, and he renamed the Gulf of Mexico, the Gulf of America, and I just can't get used to it.
All right. President Trump says that they may not be doing a lot of business. They mean the United States may not be doing a lot of business with Ontario.
President Donald Trump is at the center of this kerfuffle, but in the Democratic Party, socialist candidates and agendas are ascending. Is mainstream politics changing? Here's Newell Normand in New Orleans.
There's an interesting phenomenon going across the election cycle at the present time relative to the Democratic Socialists of America. Pearson Cross, director of the School of Behavior and Social Sciences and at the University of Louisiana Monroe, joins us. Pearson, welcome to the show. I'm having a real difficult time figuring out or putting my finger on what is really contributing to this phenomenon, generating this energy around this thought process of almost really kind of dismantling major portions of our constitutional republic.
Yeah. Well, I think we see this a lot on both sides. It's a kind of a populist movement. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with the way government in the United States is today. And this shows up, it showed up in the Republican Party with the movement for MAGA and Donald Trump. Certainly a strong reaction to the status quo. It's anti-status quo. And we've seen these kind of waves in the Democratic Party. Remember back to Occupy Wall Street and the election of some people who were avowedly socialist, and now the Democratic Socialists of America. So it just reflects a pretty broad revulsion at what's happening in American politics.
But I mean, I get what you're talking about with MAGA, and even to a certain extent, Occupy Wall Street. It wasn't really talking about dismantling, though, this traditional norms of a constitutional republic that we have grown accustomed to and have lived within and under for 250 years.
Yeah, one of the things that, and I always talk about this in my classes, is that the founders designed the American Republic not to be very efficient or work very well, because they built conflict into it with the checks and balances and different institutions sharing power and all that kind of stuff. And it gets very, very frustrating. And for people who don't really understand that that's part of the deal, that compromise is part of the deal, that you're not going to get a whole loaf and those kind of things, that's why we get these calls to reform government, to do away with different things. And it's always been there, but, you know, at times it appears less there.
I guess, is this about speed? Is this about efficiency? What else could it would be driving this where they want to eliminate the Senate? They want to eliminate the Supreme Court. But it's almost as though we're throwing a lot of stuff on the wall, seeing what's going to stick.
Yeah, and, you know, it's self-defeating because none of those proposals can work. I mean, the only way you would ever get to, and I personally think it would be an incredible travesty if we were ever to do any of that stuff and would lead to horrors that are hard to contemplate at this point. But the only way we'd ever get there would be if there was a complete breakdown of order and basically revolution number three, if you want to count the first and then the Civil War and then this one. And hopefully that's not going to happen. So these people who are talking about all that stuff, they're pie in their eye, but it's never going to get here.
But what happens inside the halls of Congress, both on the House and the Senate side, if, for example, the DSA would be successful in making it through a general election process where they get a greater number of folks that are inside of there?
Well, you know, I'm not saying that there's not something going on and that we should pay attention to it and take it seriously. But if we go back to, remember when Ross Perot was running for president, he got 19.2 or 19.4% of the vote. You know, 1 in 5 votes in that election was cast for Ross Perot. And he ended up getting almost nothing in the House or Senate. You know, our government, our election structure and everything is just set up to kind of defeat these kind of waves that come along. And, you know, the DSA, I just don't see it as significant other than an expression of something. It's an expression of anger, expression of outrage, an expression of frustration, but culminating in what? You know, I just don't see it getting there.
Yeah. But it seems to have had more staying power than some of the others. You know, I mean, I remember that in particular with Ross Perot, I mean, a lot of folks, excuse my language, but a lot of folks referred to him as kind of the political enema of the time.
You know, yeah.
You know, to have somebody go in there and kind of be the act as the ex-lax of Congress and you know, and the executive department, and you know, it was kind of interesting. This kind of takes on a different flavor, though, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that impulse is there. And we saw that like with the January 6th people. I mean, they were ready to, you know, march on the Capitol and tear it all down and basically call off American government's normal functioning. And I think we see that a lot, like the Tea Party, for example. Remember 2010, the Tea Party? Enormous movement, and they won 60 votes. You know, there was a 60-seat swing in the House of Representatives, and Barack Obama was immediately faced with a very unfriendly Congress 2 years into his term, right? So there's a real, I think this is cyclical. I think it comes back. And I think people they get frustrated and these movements start. And where they end up, I don't know. But I'm just taking comfort in the past movements that we haven't got all the way to where we think. I think we have a great imagination about where it might end up. But I'm certainly hoping that that's just what it is.
Meanwhile, the American Federation of Teachers is calling for a boycott of the retailer Target. Here's more from Adam and Jordana in Minneapolis.
Randy Weingarten, who is the president of the AFT, American Federation of Teachers, who is calling for this boycott, is joining us.
This is a very long-running conversation that we have had since Metro Surge. In January and in March, we wrote to Target, to the new CEO, complimented them in March for changing their mind and making good with community again about the, you know, the diversity changes that they had pulled back on and then they had reinstated. But what we said in January and what we said again in March was that corporations around the country have to stand up for their neighbors and their citizens. And in Washington, D.C., and in Minnesota and Minneapolis and others, our members and others were talking about how Target was not standing up for communities. And what we said was, during back to school, if they didn't stand up for communities, then we would shop local and shop other places. And what we were did this summer was we, you know, created a website so that people could, you know, put in their zip code and find other places to shop. And because we knew that that was important to people, and frankly, teachers and parents spend a lot of money in terms of back to school. Teachers spend an average of about $900 that they dig into their pocket from back to school. So we knew that we needed to find other places that had, you know, a suitable price point. And so that's why we put this out again this week. But this was something that has been long simmering. And all Target had to do was to say, we stand with our neighbors and not with ICE. And they wouldn't do it. And so we said over and over again to them in two letters, you know, that in back to school, we're going to stand locally and we're going to shop other places. And that's what we're doing.
Why is it the position of the American Federation of Teachers that a private company has to take a political stance that agrees with you for you to buy from them? Why are politics entering this at all?
It's not. It's as those of you who actually, and I was in Minnesota in January during that period of time. This is not political. This is about humanity. When you saw what happened to kids, and it's still happening in terms of the fear and the terror that kids have, when you saw that teachers have to actually have whistles and cameras, when you see that American citizens or people who are here legally are deported, when you see that we don't have a focus on loving our neighbors, that's not political. And what we need is we need corporate America to stand up, like the law firms are standing up, like unions are standing up for team humanity. That's what this is about. It's about team humanity. And that's why what we've said is, let's shop locally. Let's shop with small businesses. Let's do other things, unless a company like Target, who has been such a, you know, it was founded in Minnesota. Target is all over Washington, D.C. We see the same things in Washington as well. People are basically saying, we need you, corporate America, to stand with the human beings in this country and to stand for team humanity. So I don't see this as political. I see this as loving our neighbors and protecting our neighbors.
Some of your teachers that are in your union don't necessarily agree. Someone said, I'm in Minnesota. Of course, I was here when Renee Good and Alex Pretty were murdered by ICE agents. I lived through it. I am a Minnesotan. My children are here. They go to school here. So I was boots on the ground following this every day. And I have a local teacher here on the text line that says, as an experienced MSP educator, Minneapolis homeowner, an LGBT community member, I am grateful for all that Target has done for teachers. The union does not speak for all of us educators. Hey, union, work on getting more school skills and exciting, relevant programming. It is in respect and consider multiple points of view for creative and effective problem solving. The texter goes on. This educator says this call for a boycott seems way off, and data analytics focusing on supporting educators and schools, not boycotts. So what would you say to that teacher who is a member of your union?
Look, we are the fastest growing union in the United States right now. And I completely respect and honor her opinion in terms of this. And I think what Target is doing these days is it's trying to actually, you know, reduce its prices, which I applaud, and trying to actually bring customers back, which I applaud. But what we're saying is stand up for our schools and stand up for all this. What she's saying about bringing back experiential learning,
that's who we are. We believe in career tech ed, and we believe in all that stuff. And we're doing all of that at the same time. I think we're working with companies who are willing to work with us in terms of bringing back that kind of career learning. So she has a right to her opinion. That is what our Democratic Union is about. We passed this resolution. The AFL passed this resolution. We've passed it unanimously in our executive council. The AFL passed it at their convention. But of course, people can disagree. We're making sure that people have the alternatives to shop locally, but we've asked Target to actually help its communities and actually stand up for our immigrant families. That's what this focus has been in terms of Target.
And the numbers do show that Target does really appreciate and help its communities and its teachers. The Target Circle Teacher Appreciation every summer gives a 20% discount. The Target Circle 360 Educator offers a 50% off Target Circle. Target Foundation and Community Grants give $500 to $2,000 to local schools and nonprofit organizations. Goods 360. And ma'am, Randy, I just want to remind you that $1 billion in education commitment from Target between 2010 and 2015, Target fulfilled a pledge to donate $1 billion toward education and youth programs. And it goes on and on. What I'm hearing from the union is if you don't agree with our political view on this, then it sounds like it's bad business because you're turning away Target. You're alienating Target, who supports teachers so much.
Target has what we said to Target is that we need you to support our kids and our communities.
And
that
they do
is
that.
What we have saying.
With all the money they just gave.
What they're doing in certain respects is that they're supporting certain groups of teachers and certain groups of students. And in certain respects, when it comes to this basic principle of how we are supporting our immigrant kids and how we are making sure that schools are safe, that's what we asked them. And that's why we said, let's shop local this year. And frankly, for Target not to respond to the letters and not to respond to the broader community, as you said and as you saw. But what I'm saying is that overwhelmingly, we want Target to be a good neighbor. There are many corporations that used to spend a lot of money in terms of their local schools, and these days they're doing less and less. I'm glad to hear that Target is doing some of that work. That's why they should be out there supporting all of our students.
And they are, with over 8 million books donated to libraries, awarding $87 million in education grants. I mean, what I'm hearing you say is just they have to virtue signal and say, bad ice, and then everything's going to be okay.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we need to actually make sure our immigrant families, we have to make sure that our families feel safe and protected. And a corporation like Target could really help hugely if they did that.
And they do. They support with money and books.
Well,
what you're saying is to support with words, but words from a private corporation. Target doesn't have the power to stop ICE. Target doesn't have the power to house young immigrants.
Words from a private corporation could have gone a far distance. And frankly, I'm really glad they're doing these other things. We need our communities to be protected. We need people to feel safe walking to and from school as we're doing back to school. We need that to do that. And that's what we're saying.
And how would Target keep those kids safe walking back and forth? How do they do that?
If corporate America was out there saying we need to protect our neighbors, it would go a long way.
And so do you prefer the words over the money they're actually giving the schools?
I prefer that people, I prefer that corporations would protect people and would support people in words and in deeds. And that's why we have done this. That's why we have done this work. Mm-hmm. We basically have asked Target over and over mm-hmm. again, support in the most primal of ways, support our kids that go to school, support our teachers, support our paraprofessionals. And ultimately, that's what we've asked them from January on. And we said from January on that, you know, if mm-hmm. if this didn't happen, we would ask people to shop locally, not to shop at Target. And that's what we've done.
I'm speaking with Randy Weingartner. She is the head of the American Teachers Federation.
And
Randy,
I'm
I just want to read what Target did Target issued a call for de-escalation. In response to the growing community outrage, Target's executive leadership co-signed an open letter alongside 60 other Minnesota corporate leaders via the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce calling for immediate de-escalation and tensions. Was that not enough for you?
What we said was, what Target also did was they blamed the protesters. They said
I don't have any information on that.
That I read that letter and that both sides were a problem. And
there was
a
lot of unrest
over and over again. Yes, I was in Minnesota a lot. My members are there a lot.
Yes,
but
so am I.
But the question becomes right now. Yes, you live there. Becomes right now, how do we ensure as we are going back to school and our immigrant families feel really, really, really scared. We are saying to corporate America, we are saying to Target, stand with our neighbors. And that's what we're saying here. And what we did here was we created a website so people had alternatives from where to shop. And that's what we've said. We want our schools. We want our kids. We want people to feel like they are not going to be targeted going to and from school. We've already had in Maine and in Florida and in Texas people who have been picked up by ICE who were here legally. We've seen that in the last few weeks. We're asking corporate America to stand with people. That's what we're asking them to do. We want people to feel, and kids to feel, safe going back to school during this period of time.
Randy, we all want that. So I'm glad we can agree on that.
Okay.
We all want that.
Anyway, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for coming on and answering our questions. And if Target has a security program that walks kids to school, I hope they implement that as well.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.